If you could go back in time and speak to yourself before you started making audio drama, what advice would you give yourself? That's the question we posed to a plethora of audio drama creators, and they're about to answer it just for you. It's the Audio Drama Production Podcast, episode 100.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. A very special centenary episode this time around, that's right. We are 100 years old exactly, aren't we, Matthew?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like 100 years ago, but here we are. What a collection of audio dramatists we've brought together for this episode as well. In fact, although it's the 100th episode, we're going to split the episode in two, because we got so much clips and there's so much good advice there that I didn't think it was fair to have a lot of these clips, you know, 2 hours into an episode. So I think it would make more sense to split it into two. So
the old Quentin Tarantino thing of splitting the films up in order to make a bit more money.
Yeah,
is that what it is?
Making more money out of this, definitely. So it's great to be here. We're recording in my house. It was a bit too cold to go out to the car. Mm-hmm. We haven't really planned for this. I know it's a big occasion, but we've just kind of thrown it together, not using the best of mics or anything like that. But I suppose we're just continuing as we've kind of been doing for the first 100 episodes.
Yeah, just a reminder that you can make a podcast with any old setup. As long as you're getting the content out there, that's the key thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and the absolute meat of the content is coming from other people in this episode. We are merely here as facilitators, but we have, of course, brought our own humble pieces of advice to the table for the listener as well, haven't we? So what did you cook up, Robert?
Something that occurred to me after listening to The Behemoth, again, by Rick Coast Productions. Say you've got your characters and you might be worried they're a little bit two-dimensional, although in your head they're fairly fleshed out. How do you get that extra layer of personality out? Say your character has a precarious situation. Could be a chance for you to just layer a little bit of identity from your character. You could say something like, say they're on the beach and they would say, you know, takes me back to my childhood when you used to come here with the family. We would do this, we would do that. Happy times. Not like now, where I'm buried up to my neck and I'm going to get my head chopped off by the baddie unless I somehow find a way out of this. So rather than just saying, here I am on the beach and I'm in trouble, there's that extra level of background from the character. And it just fleshes them out and tells you a bit about them and you feel like you know them a bit better. And plus, it's a nice juxtaposition between the happy memory of their childhood and the awfulness of the cliffhanger situation. It just fleshes out everything a little bit. That's my advice.
Good. For myself, when you're a creative person, when you're involved in any sort of medium, audio drama or any other sort of content creation, podcasts like this one, reading books, watching tutorials, that's all really, really important as you develop your skills. But I think one of the most important things for someone who tells fictional stories of any kind is to live as full a life as possible. So noticing things around you, speaking to people, being a good listener, just absorbing all your experiences and always making, you know, bringing these things together to make up your fiction, because life experience is so important when you're telling stories. So even though it's great to maybe read books about how to write and watch tutorials about how to tell stories and listen to this show and all the advice that's going to come with this episode, just remember to, you know, listen to people, live your life, experience things and put that into your work. I think it really benefits stories and makes us all unique in the way that we tell them.
Sights and smells and things, yeah.
Sights and smells. So onwards to our episode this week. When you bring together, and it's the same when it's just us getting together here, it's always opinions, isn't it? We're always given opinions. I dare say the listener won't always agree with us.
No, and definitely not.
That's great. And we're bringing together lots of different opinions in this episode. And I think, for the listener going into this episode, just treat it a bit like a buffet at a party. So, you know, take what you like and disregard what you don't like so much.
Yeah, and remember that it's not always a rule, the things that you hear. I mean, even in things like language, there are rules, but they have exceptions, like I before E, except after C. So, you know, don't think that what someone has said to you will work in that situation will work every time. There's bound to be disclaimers, caveats, and a little bit of common sense. But if you think about the principles behind the advice, hopefully there'll be something you can take away there.
Yeah, so the clips in this episode and in the next episode, they're not in any particular order whatsoever. Apart from the first one, I thought it would be really apt to kick off with someone who, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't be standing here today. In fact, we'd probably be in the pub, so I'm not sure if I like him that much. Mm. but we're going to start with Mr. Jack Kincaid, the creator of Edict Zero. It's a show that we mention so many times on this podcast, and it's one of the big reasons why we create audio drama. And as always, Jack's got some brilliant advice for us, and he's someone that, you know, I'm always prepared to listen to when he speaks.
This is Jack Kincaid, the producer of Edict Zero FIS. I guess my first piece of advice would be to remember that listeners don't have the same inside knowledge that you do about a story. They don't have the same visuals that you have in your head. And this is all audio, so you have to communicate it all through sound. Don't presuppose, I guess is a way of saying it. Don't presuppose. But so there's that. Denotation. Denotation and connotation, I guess, would be another thing. Personal connotations. You cannot control, at least at first, you cannot control the personal connotations of people that are listening to your story. You know, one example might be, maybe there's a particular song that has meaning to you, but it doesn't likely carry the same vibes for somebody else. And if you want to make an association between music and a particular concept or feeling or character or whatever, you have to do the work to craft one in their heads. I mean, that's what you're doing. You have to take what's in your head and put it in theirs, basically, in some way. Also about music, you might also be tempted to make sure that all the music is different and you don't repeat the same melodies, as you might be thought to be unimaginative or repetitive, but repetition is extremely powerful if it's used in a meaningful way, like the Ambassador theme. Anyone who listens to Edict Zero knows at this point, if they hear the start of that theme when someone enters a room, the Ambassador is there. He doesn't have to say a thing. He doesn't have to say a thing to create a presence in the listener's mind. They know who's there. Another example, I guess, would be the Barber of Seville with Captain Socrates. It's a powerful proximity of sound effect. Usually, you also know that an opening scene is coming to an end when the Edict Zero theme creeps into the soundscape building to the credits. Same with the ending credits. You're creating an expectation. You're making an association. There's a comfort from their perspective, knowing that, you know, being on the inside of that. The other thing to be said about connotations, same with the music, is even of plot and characters, is that you can't control what the personal connotations will be at first. Stories, art, characters at its finest, they're all inkblot tests, really. Usually the interpretation of the personal will kind of tell you a lot about them, actually. Also, sometimes you write a story that has a particular meaning to you based on your personal experience, but the person interpreting your art will do it through the filter of their experience. So if you really want to get a specific thing to come across, you have to convey the right mood through the music or through the ambience. You have to actually build those associations. You have to create those associations. And as I said, that makes them comfortable. Another thing I would say is that don't be discouraged by low download counts or a small audience even. It takes time to develop an audience. The internet is a big, noisy place. I would also caution not to despair about lack of comments. You know, people tend to be lurkers. Some of your biggest fans might be lurkers. They listen, they love everything you do, but they don't say a thing. That's just the nature of the internet. So, you know, don't read into, you know, lack of comments or even lack of response at first. the misinterpretation of silence and its disastrous consequences, basically. Best advice I can give, basically, is to think about what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish. I mean, I think we would all like our work to go viral and explode and be everywhere. And many are hoping to transcend from hobbyist to professional. I kind of hate those words, but, you know, having this be a stepping stone to a working life, you know. And that's all fine, but don't be thinking of that while you're creating. Don't think of that. Don't. It taints it somehow. Create something amazing for the sake of creating something amazing. You want to capture something. Capture something great. Capture it forever. Push yourself. Surprise yourself. Don't be afraid to experiment either and explore different ways of doing things. I mean, within reason. But it's that spirit of freedom that brought 8-0 into existence in the first place. There's no way it would exist otherwise. There's no way it would have passed through any gates. There's no way a story like that would be bought by somebody or they would pay you to do such a thing. That kind of story has no precedent, really. Everybody says to be succinct, be as succinct as possible, and that, you know, every line should have a purpose and everything. Well, that's all well and good, but then you end up with something very mechanical. What do you want to bring into existence? A robot or something that lives and breathes? So, you know, and in audio drama especially, it's okay to let the listener settle in with the characters. I mean, within reason, you know. Some of the fans of Edict Zero like the fact that I write a lot of the scenes in such a way, especially the procedural scenes between the agents, that you almost feel like you're sitting in the room and working with them. You almost feel like you have joined the FIS and you're like part of this unit. You know what it feels like to be working with these guys. My last piece of advice would be to remember that the end product is all that matters. How you arrive there, or what techniques you used, what microphones you used, you know, what DAW you used, whatever. All of that, it only matters to your own process and your learning curve. In the end, the final product is all that matters. That's what's going to be out there. That's what people are going to judge. And that's what people are going to hear. And based on that, they're going to decide whether to listen to your next episode or listen to the next thing that you make. Or, you know, they're going to pass on it. So that's all I got. Thanks, guys.
Hello, I'm Marielle Raneker-Temple from the Wireless Theatre Company. Happy 100th episode or audio drama production podcast. The advice that I would give myself before I started making audio drama, knowing what I know now, which is nearly 10 years later, is get a good team. And the main reason that Wireless Theatre has had any kind of success, really, is because of the brilliant team. A team of really enthusiastic, talented people motivated by their love of audio theatre. Not necessarily hugely experienced in audio theatre, but definitely really skilled in, you know, what they do. So over the years, we've worked with a whole load of incredible writers, actors, directors, recording engineers, editors, some of them who've never done specifically radio drama, but all of them who are really passionate about theatre and keen to get involved. And, you know, we've asked people to do crazy things in the name of radio drama, usually, certainly in the early days, for no money. You know, we recorded 8 plays in 8 days at Edinburgh Fringe Festival without any get-in time. We recorded 2 plays a day at the Roundhouse for 4 or 5 days, again, with no get-in time. You know, we've had people hiding behind doors for like nearly an hour on a live recording just to do one scare. We recorded a radio play on a bike going through rush hour in central London with, you know, a microphone strapped to the front handles. And, you know, and then obviously, you know, massive long recordings with people sitting in a dark room editing for, you know, days and days and days. And really, with very little complaint, and mostly because, A, we made sure that it was really fun. And by fun, I mean the project was really fun and also the pub afterwards was exceptionally fun. but also really good. You know, everyone believed really strongly in what you're doing. And I thought when I first started that, you know, I would try and do it all myself, editing, you know, make literally physically recording the dramas, because I just didn't think that anyone would be willing to come on board, you know, really technically for no money, because of a company that I thought was a good idea. But actually, the right people could do. And, you know, we still work with most of those people now. Pretty much all of those people who were involved in the early days now are involved with us. We're in a much better position now, so we are able to pay people. But I don't find, you know, they were exactly the same people and work just as passionately now as they did when we, you know, we were doing it on a kind of fringe basis. I was told really, really early on when I was first starting the business that actually you live and die by the quality of the work that you produce. So as long as that quality is you know, consistently good, then, you know, you're always going to be successful, I think, or certainly, you know, have a good reputation. You know, we've obviously learned a lot more as time's gone on and produced really, really top quality stuff now. But I stand by the first play that we recorded is still on our website at the moment because it still holds its own and it stands, you know, stands up with the rest of the stuff. So that would be what I would tell myself. I would say, you know, if you want to do this seriously, which I did, then make sure you surround yourself with the best people. And that's definitely something that still happens now. And hopefully we'll continue to do so. Thanks very much, guys, for your podcast, which is just brilliant. Here's to another 100 more episodes, I'd say.
Hi, I'm David Reinstrom. I'm the host of Radio Drama Revival. I'm a former writer and producer on Our Fair City, producer emeritus, if you please. Before I got started with those guys, though, I made a series of radio plays with my two best friends when we were university students. It was called the KWUR Theater of the Air at Washington University. The broadcast originated from KWUR 90.3 FM. It would have been about 20, 21 when those plays were first produced. We did three shows. One was called Sky Pirates. And there was another one called The Human Cord, which is a superhero with funk powers. And then there was a horror, like an occult Western piece called Simon Colt. And I had a lot of fun working in those productions. They were all student-made, student-written, student-scored. We had a funk band. We had a swing ensemble. It was great. I learned a lot from those productions. I think these are my big takeaways. Number one, rewrite, don't revise. I learned this from Our Fair City, from working on Our Fair City. If I could go back to 20-year-old me, 19-year-old me, and say, okay, you're writing these shows, I would say, if you've got a script and it's not working, you have your friends read it aloud and tell you what's working and what's not, and then see if you can just rewrite the thing wholesale, just from scratch. You know, keep the outline somewhere else, save the first draft, and then just start anew for the second draft and see what you can create based on that. And then when you're done, compare the first two drafts and then steal from yourself. Find the things that you like about the first draft, throw them back in. But don't be afraid to really break the bones of the first draft. You can always go back. That's thing number one. Thing number two is edit viciously. Because you know who doesn't have time for indulgent digressions? Everyone else but you, unfortunately. So I have this theory about joke making, and it's kind of like throwing a punch. You'll do much better if you throw in little jabs and get away from them quick, instead of throwing these low, slow, big telegraphed haymakers that take forever to connect and then throw you off balance afterwards. So you want to get in there with like a little joke and then get off it. And don't labor the point too much. Belaboring the point is really obnoxious, and I'm doing it now, so let's move on. Number three, if you wrote the script, that's cool, that's great. You don't have to be the main character. This was a tough one for me. I don't think I needed to be in all the things that I was in, just because I wrote them. You got to learn to trust people with your words. Because if you're going to be successful in any kind of creative endeavor, you have to let other people into your process. So you don't always have to be the hero. You don't have to, you know, and also, if you are the writer, the director, and the star, that means you are like You are losing three opportunities for someone else to tell you that you've got a lemon on your hands, that it's not great, that the show's not great. And if you do all these things yourself, then you're not going to be able to tell if something is could be improved. Thing number four, representation is really important. If you're going to write a character from a minority culture, first of all, maybe bring in a friend from that minority culture to look over it and make sure it's not ruefully offensive. And then, super important, cast a member of that minority culture to play that character. There is a long and ugly tradition in radio theater and audio fiction, or in all fiction generally, right, of people from majority cultures portraying people from minority cultures, and maybe not necessarily intending harm, but nevertheless perpetuating some. So be very careful and attempt whenever you can to have a diverse cast. Just people with different experiences and people with different perspectives make a better show. Number five, baked goods are everything. I went through 10 pounds of flour a week when I was a producer for the KWUR Theater of the Air. Because every Sunday we would get up and we would rehearse. And if you can imagine, yeah, I got like 20 college students up at, you know, 9 a.m. on a Sunday because I would bake bread every Sunday morning and like have these focaccias and baguettes. And I would bring them in these grocery bags. I had a professor named Philip Sewell, who's a film professor, a great guy, who said that the importance of what is called craft services in the film industry is never to be underestimated. Feeding your staff, feeding your actors, feeding your fellow writers, whomever, is really important for morale. Because frankly, if you're working in a situation where there's no money, morale is the only thing you've got to go on. So any way that you can materially support the people that are giving you their time and their labor is something that you should pursue. And food and drink is a really good way to do that. So that is what I would tell 20-year-old me when I first started making the K-Wer Theater of the Air. And cheers on episode 100, gentlemen. Thank you for asking me to participate. See you around.
Hi, I'm Vienna Yechko from the Vienna Yechko podcast. That's J-E-T, like Jumbo Chat, S-C-H, as in school, K-O, like in knockout, and I'm very nervous at the moment. I started podcasting last year, and I've come across a couple of things because I also try to get better, and I might give a lot of newbie advices. I think I'm going to start with something that's very important to me because that's what I just did yesterday because of this big project that's all new and scary and awkward and I feel intimidated by it. And that thing is procrastinating. I'll try to get some insight on that. Procrastinating or I can do this tomorrow, which means that you will push the work into the future and never really get it done. That's usually not because you're lazy, but because there's something stopping you from starting your project. And that's very often either because you're afraid of something, you feel overwhelmed by the project because it's too complicated or too big, or because you might think, oh, doing this certain task that I need to do is way too boring and I don't want to get it started. I want to do the fun part. So you might have your writing and your recording done, but the sound editing might not be for you and you go like, oh God, no, I don't want to do this. And there are several things you can deal with this. And I want to start with the tedious part. You can either go like, okay, I'm going to do audio editing for an hour and do this for a week or so. Like every day you're going to do your audio editing for an hour and you will get where you want to get, like finishing your audio drama at some point. Or you can go like, okay, I'm going to do this for a whole day now, and afterwards I'm going to do something very fun and reward yourself for that. You can also combine this, like doing some tedious task you don't like to do, for an hour and then go like, okay, I'm going to do something fun for another hour. And if it's really, really unbearable and it's completely stopping your process and you really have no idea how to get around with, and even not the method I mentioned before works, then you should probably think about getting someone else on the team who loves to do that and maybe ask for help, because ultimately you don't want your project to die somewhere in between production just because you can't get yourself to work on it or because it's impossible for you to work on it. The other thing could be a problem because you feel overwhelmed by the size or the complexity of the project. For that, you have to make a plan. You would either have to go and sit down and say, like, okay, I want to do this audio drama. What do I need for this? I need a story. So I have to write a script. I want to have it about, let's say, 20 minutes long. So if you research it online or just listen to me, it's about one page per minute. So you have to write 20 pages of script to get that done. And then once that's done, you got to ask friends or record it for yourself. So you got to sit down or get the people together and work it out and record it. And then you have to split up your script again into several scenes, which you probably had, and then put them together like that in audio production. So what you ultimately do, you take your more complicated steps or your bigger projects into smaller mini steps, like very, very small tasks. Like, okay, I need to get an actor for that part. So what I'm going to do? Well, you usually rather call your friends or go online and find someone. And then you have to arrange a recording session and so on. To tackle that, you just, you know, write it down and make a list of it. And if it's like a very complicated scene that's really troubling you, then you should just try to figure out how we can break it down to so many small steps. Even like, okay, I gotta add a sound effect here, or the voice gotta go here, and then when he stops talking, I gotta add a sound effect or the music or whatnot. And just, you know, take it step by step, work on those different levels, and just make it very, very, very easy for you to start working. And also tell yourself that it's just gonna be that one step, and then the next, and then the next, and not going like, oh my god, I gotta do a whole audio drama, because that's not helping your situation. You wanna make it simple and not complicated for yourself. And the last thing is fear. The most known thing, I guess, of all the two biggest fears, I guess, is the fear of not being good enough, that you can easily tackle by going like, yeah, we just started out. Of course, you're not going to be perfect. You are just training. This is something to get better. So no harm done. The other thing is probably being afraid of fear of failing or not being good enough for yourself or not getting the feedback you want. And if you're even afraid of that before publishing, you should probably tell yourself you're afraid of that before even producing. You should probably tell yourself, okay, you don't have to publish it. You can only show it to the people involved. You can only show it to your friends and really try to make you feel more comfortable about this, because thinking so far ahead into the future is no, it's no help. And you will never know if it be bad feedback or good feedback if you never produced the audio drama or the piece of work you're working on. So that the thing with the fear is very complicated and very, very to yourself. You have to figure out what exactly is stopping yourself. And there's not really one answer to that. You have to find out for yourself, maybe talk to your friends or talk to yourself very openly about it and find out what exactly is stopping you and how you can avoid it and how you can break it down. So you might actually get to produce your own audio drama and be very proud of yourself, because not everybody's doing it. And it takes some while and it takes some time and effort. And yeah, I hope that helps. I personally have a lot of problem with procrastinating when I feel overwhelmed or facing a new situation. And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. And I think I might throw this in, even if it's not a thing for everyone. And if it's not a thing for you, probably because you are working for 40 hours, a week and you only have such a limited time left for audio drama and you don't have enough time to waste around, you go like, okay, I'm going to do this for now because, well, I got an hour for, to do this today and not more nor less, so I better get together. Then, yeah, well, you are somehow lucky in a way. And that's another advice you can give yourself if you're having a problem with procrastinating. Set yourself your own deadline that you have to meet. That way you will probably unleash a lot of potential and energy and motivation that you have not had before. So I hope that is somehow helpful. And thanks.
Hi, I'm John Wakefield. I'm one of the producers and directors on the podcast sitcom Wooden Overcoats. Congratulations on your 100th show. So the question that I was asked was, what piece of advice would I give myself if I could go back to just before my first audio drama? And I think the thing I would go back and say to myself as I embarked on a stupidly ambitious Civil War alternative history thing when I was initially 17 and then a much more sensible sort of 20 when I'd learned the ropes a bit, is that when you're soundscaping something, always go three or four steps further. You've got to paint that world in such detail and clarity for the listener that it enables them to picture absolutely everything in that world. And it's the things in a world that you just don't expect and don't think about on an initial think through. You know, if you've got an army on the march, well, the first thing that occurs to you perhaps are you've got the boots marching on the dirt, some horses' hooves, and, you know, you can hear around you, obviously, the atmosphere of the countryside, etc. But think about it more deeply. All of those soldiers will be muttering to themselves. What are they talking about? It's probably relevant to the plot, so it's worth recording something that's relevant in that regard. Their officers are probably calling out, trying to hold their horses in sway as they march. And especially if something huge like an airship should suddenly fly over, those crowd reactions are going to be huge. And so the horses are going to whinny, all those things. But more than that, what else is going to happen? The wind is likely to pick up. The trees will rustle. All those things will happen. So always think deeper. Add an extra three or four layers of sound, and you'll never regret doing that. That's not to take away from doing, also on the opposite end of the spectrum, the most simple, pure sound, you know, with only a couple of effects and a beautifully recorded voice, which is the real power of audio as well. Do more with more and do more with less are always possible and always worth trying. But above all, never stop playing. Never stop throwing things at it and just seeing what works.
Hey, what's going on, guys? My name is Brian Mock, and I am the creator of the ZPOC Nation audio drama. First of all, I'd like to congratulate Matthew and Robert on 100 episodes. Simply amazing. Simply amazing. In early 2014, I discovered We're Alive by, of course, I'm sure everyone knows Casey Whalen. Never had I thought of audio drama as anything significant. I always thought it was a Little Orphan Annie, you know, from A Christmas Story. Just something kind of goofy, kind of campy. And I heard We're Alive. I was like, man, this is something incredible. I would love to do this. I put it away, and I just went about my business doing my silly show. On February 26th, 2015, I found the Audio Drama Production Podcast. The episode was about conveying thought through audio. And then I started down the rabbit hole, and I went back and listened to all the previous episodes, and I listened and I listened, and I decided I made a decision that I wanted to change ZPOC from a talk show to an audio drama. But I sat on it. I didn't do anything with it. I just thought about it. So I was like, I want to do this, but I can't do it with crappy sound. So I started investing in equipment. I got a nice little Behringer microphone and a mixer. I got a MacBook. I'm spending all this time, all this money, but I'm not actually doing anything. If I could give advice to myself from back then, my advice would be, the hell with it, just do it. It wasn't until I dove into the ADPP Facebook group and I broke my fear of acknowledging that I didn't know anything. And I started asking questions. I found that the group in and of itself was very helpful. Everyone in the group, supportive, knowledgeable. There's still a lot of things I don't know. If we start getting into the technicalities of microphones and diaphragms and flat lines and decibels and all that stuff, I don't know what the hell's going on. The only way I could learn, though, is by just biting the bullet and making an audio drama. So I have a clip here from the very first audio drama that I ever produced.
It was a time of chaos. One of the infected dove through my window. It chased me all through the house. I grabbed a knife, stabbed him, over and over. I ran to my car.
Kind of weird, right? It's cringeworthy going back and listening to my first things. But I did them. And I've always said, in interviews I've done on other podcasts, I believe on this very show, the last time I was on here, my mission statement is no matter how bad the audio drama is that you put out there for the world, it's 1,000,000% better than the one you were too scared to produce in the first place. Meaning, if you just sit back and just wish that you did it, no one's ever going to hear your story. Getting over your fear, the F it factor. F it, I'm doing it. I wish I knew that way back when and wasn't so timid and scared. You see, I started my new audio drama in 2016. If I had just gotten over my fear, I could have had a few extra years of experience under my belt. But I was gripped with fear. Here's what I've learned since. Here's a clip from my latest episode.
I'm out of here.
Where are we going?
We aren't going anywhere.
No. No. Chris. Please.
Not perfect. Hell of a lot better than the first one, I think. But with that being said, Matthew and Robert, thank you for inspiring me to get involved in this crazy world. Thank you for everything that you guys have done for me, and I'm sure for lots of people listening. Thank you for inspiring new storytellers. And here's to 100 more episodes. I'm Brian Mock from ZPOC Nation. You can find us at ZPOCNation.com and on iTunes.
Hi, everyone. This is Lauren Shippen, the creator and writer, as well as one of the voices of The Bright Sessions. My piece of advice has to do with writing. Unlike a lot of people, I approach writing an audio drama from an acting perspective. And while there are still lots of things that I have to learn about writing and structure, I think it's important for writers to think about things from an acting side as well. Even if you're not voicing a character yourself, or if you haven't cast the actors yet, I think it can be really helpful to speak out loud as your characters. This can mean reading the whole episode out loud to yourself after you finished writing it, or it can mean talking in a character's voice before you even put pen to paper. Figure out what filler words they use, how quickly they talk, if they use slang, and so on. I find that saying these things out loud, that talking to myself as I write, really helps me clarify the difference between each character's speech. You might feel a little goofy while you do it, but you'll find out more about your characters, and it will make writing that much smoother and that much more enjoyable. So start talking and writing, and good luck.
Hello, this is Jonathan Mitchell. I produce the Truth Podcast. And my advice to people who are making audio drama is whenever anyone says that things have to be done a certain way, know that they don't know what they're talking about, because there's no rules to this. Don't imitate things you love that already exist, but think of what you wish existed that doesn't already and make that. That's what you have to offer the world. And you'll know when you find that, because it's going to burn a hole right through you, right through your fingers into your keyboard and mouse and onto your Pro Tool session. incidentally, while I'm on the subject of Pro Tools sessions, I would say, you know, you don't have to use Pro Tools. You don't even have to use a computer. You could use an old cassette deck and you could make something amazing. So open yourself up to lots of different possibilities. Don't think that there's just one way to do this. Don't define what you're doing based on what other people are doing. What they're doing is already getting done. You know, you have to see yourself as being sort of a pioneer of your own ideas. Almost everything that is done in audio drama or any creative field can be done probably an infinite number of ways. So look for other ways of doing things. Don't make assumptions about how things have to be. You know, really think adventurously about what you want to do and what how you can use the medium and what kinds of stories you want to tell and what's going to excite you as a listener. Because if something excites you, chances are there's a lot of people out there who are going to feel the same way.
So we're going back to the New England Audio Dramatist Meetup now to hear from Scott Hickey, Bill DeVries, Fred Greenhalgh, Jeremy Holstein, and Brian Bristol.
Get to know as many people as you can who do it, and try to learn as much as you can from everybody who knows what you're doing. When I first started, I didn't know anybody. I was all alone, and I didn't have a lot of stuff to draw upon. And when you listen to the early shows, you can tell. But I do think that, yeah, I mean, nowadays, there's so many people who have a lot of knowledge on this. There's so many people who are willing to help that it's important. It's really important to draw upon other people, their experience, because, you know, I mean, that's the big thing. It's the experience of other people. And the other thing I would say, too, is to just do as much of it as you can, because you learn by doing. You can, these people, there's seminars and such, and that's great. But you can only talk to people for so long. You really have to sit down and do it, and you have to see. And even if it comes out crappy, you know, you just have to sit down and do it. And that's how you learn.
You keep going.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of podcasts and a lot of projects and a lot of really talented creators just give up because they thought they'd be famous overnight and they weren't. And, you
well,
know,
that's why they're doing it too.
Yeah. It takes 10 years to be an overnight success.
Mm-hmm. But if you have the passion,
yeah,
you know, that's what it is. I mean, you need talent as well, obviously, but, yeah, you know, passion is really the thing. I mean,
just rolling up your sleeves and going back and being like, I'm going to listen to this for the 70th time listen for all those dialogue edits and really listen closely.
Yep.
I think the biggest learning experience for me has been to let go of the words, because I generally write the scripts as well. And starting out, the words were very precious to me and I wanted them to be spoken in a certain way. And the fact is, your actors are never going to speak them the way that you have it in your mind. And you just have to let them, you have to put your trust in them that they're going to bring something to it that you didn't necessarily hear yourself, that'll probably be better than what you heard. And that was a difficult process for me because the words were very precious to me. But the fact is, I've worked with some amazing talent at PMRP and, you know, they've generally done it better than I had it in my head. So I think that would be the biggest advice that I would have for myself.
It's harder to do with You Are Here because with the Choose Your Own Adventure, we can't write ahead. But I would say get your stuff done before you launch, you know, get as much as you can. I think a lot of the other more business-oriented podcasts I listen to always say, like, just get it out and then deal with it, you know, like deal with it after you've already launched. But I feel with audio drama, if we could get more put together, it would be a lot more comfortable because we can get more feedback going into, say, another season. Because with Atheist Apocalypse, we're already writing season 4, which is the first that's happened. Before, it's been, you know, we're still producing season 2 and we're already into writing season 3. So we're not getting all the feedback for season 2 before we start season 3. So, yeah, it would have been nice to have a little more lead time. But, you know, we learned our lesson and now we're ahead of the game, so.
Hi, this is Tom Mansell. The podcast that I do is Slumberland Podcast, and you can find it under that name in iTunes and any podcast directory. I am the writer, oftentimes voice talent, and editor of the show. Advice that I would give myself now, having done the show for a few years, At the beginning, the show that was my role model and inspiration was Welcome to Night Vale. And so some of the features of Welcome to Night Vale, I was concerned about emulating. And I would give myself the advice to let go of those perceived requirements and just follow the path that seemed most readily available to me. Specifically, doing episodes that are a regular length and come out on a regular schedule, I would give myself the advice to know the term right off the bat, audio drama. Search that term on the internet and learn more about what's happening with it out there. Listen to more shows that fall into that category. Poke around more on Facebook to see what's happening there in terms of audio drama. As a writer, don't worry about not mapping out all of the story arc when starting the podcast. I wasn't sure if it was going to work or how much fun it would end up being writing a story in segments and making up quite a lot as I went along. It turned out to be a lot of fun and seems to work well for me. I would suggest to myself, acknowledge the areas where you need help. Reaching out to friends to find people who are interested in being voice talent. Reaching out to friends for networking and promotion ideas. I would remind myself to keep in mind that during the busy times in my life with the day job and other commitments, that working on the show is a lot of fun, and the desire to keep producing the show shouldn't become a stress point. Hopefully, it would continue to be a fun, creative release valve, while at the same time giving me a good challenge to stretch myself creatively.
And now let's hear from Zachary Fortis-Gum of The Orphans.
If I could give myself any advice before I started The Orphans, it would be to research audio workflow, because that more than anything really messed us up. I started recording, mixing the first episode in 32-bit in Adobe Audition at 4,800 kilohertz per second, and with probably 40 audio tracks, and Audition, when we built that up, just could not handle it. It was not happy with me. And, you know, that really slowed us up, and that really caused a huge problem, and it made us have to change our whole recording strategy through production. It made us have to switch over how we recorded, so we recorded better. And so when I moved over to the second episode, I did a bit more research and I changed our format. I changed how we recorded. We then moved down to 24-bit. We recorded in 41. We recorded and we mixed in 4100 rather than 48, just to allow the computer to have some more breathing room in terms of processing power. And again, that still was difficult when we started building it up. And as a consequence, we've decided now for the second series to move over to Pro Tools, just because it can handle it better. But if you are working in Adobe Audition or in Audacity, really research your workflow, because the apps themselves are limited, especially in terms of processing power. So you want to research how you can create what you want, but do it in such a way that it is efficient and smoother for processing. So if there's one piece of advice I would recommend is research the kind of academic side of things, the technical side of things, so that when you get to the creative things, you don't have your software messing you up and breaking up your creative flow, because that is where you want your research and your technique to just flow fine, so that your creative side can just come out and work beautifully.
Hey, everybody. My name is Justin Fife, and with me today is...
And Ron.
And we are two of the creative minds behind Nova Dark, an audio drama set in the Star Citizen universe. You can check it out at novadark.com. We're going to answer the question of advice that we'd give ourselves before making audio drama. And I think the first one that we can both agree on is get all of your scripts written before you start recording and bringing in your voice actors. So whatever you're planning to write out, if it's, you know, season by season, at least finish your first season or at least a whole bunch of episodes if you have a pretty tight plot line to stick to so you don't write yourself into a corner. And it's just nice to have everything written out and planned out before you start.
Number two on our list would be getting all of your episodes recorded before you start releasing them, at least, you know, all of the first season, or just get a bunch in the can to give yourself some buffer time. With us, we planned on recording all of them, but we wanted to get them out as soon as possible. And that's our mistake there. Right.
Get them all done and in the can first. And number three, we have if the voice actor does not fit the role you're trying to fill, or they're not doing it exactly like you envisioned it, either recast that role or rewrite the character to match the capability of that voice actor. Really, I mean, best case scenario, just recast and get what you envisioned from the first time when you wrote it.
Yeah, and if you need to, re-record.
Yep. Multiple takes while you're recording.
And number four, be prepared for everything to take at least four times as long as you think it will.
Definitely. We run into this a lot. And if this is your first time creating audio drama, there's a steep, steep learning curve. And everything just takes a lot longer than you really think it will. So.
Yeah, whether it's writing, whether it's recording, whether it's casting, whether it's looking for time in general, it's just gonna take forever. And it's not a bad thing. No. Just be prepared.
Yep, and definitely take your time because it's worth it. Yeah. And that's the advice that we'd give ourselves before we started making AD if we could have.
Again, I want to give a big thanks to the Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Yep.
Thank you. And a big thank you for our listeners and to Robert Space Industries.
Hi, audio drama heads all around the globe. This is Dirk Hardegen from German audio drama label Ohrenkneifer. We are a three-piece producer team. All members are professional voice artists and actors in their main jobs. And our label is both a fun and love affair to audio drama. Not that big money job, but we receive and really enjoy positive feedbacks and reviews from our listeners. Since 2009, we've released 12 productions on professional press CDs or as download, which are in the stores or should be available at least all around Germany, Austria and Switzerland. We could manage to sign a distribution deal for those. We don't want to limit us to a certain genre. With every new production, we've tried different things. Science fiction, Western stuff, gangster crime stories, thriller, fantasy. And we do really enjoy the variety of stuff because the different settings, what they need is different treatment. Different kind of music and sound effects, obviously. So each production should have its own appeal and sound cosmos, if you like. Our material is self-written, especially the early work, but lately we've tried out a new course and licensed stories and books to adapt them to audio drama, which is time-consuming because you have to read and read the book again, shorten it to have a script in the end. But what it did, it broadened our fan base because we could profit a bit from the fame of the initial book and author. So that was helpful to regain and to refresh interest in the back catalogue as well. Good productions are one thing, and I'm sure you will receive a lot of good advice from colleagues all around the globe to this topic. But marketing a production is also very important. So you should look out for collaborations on the internet. Maybe you can build up a team with a comic drawing artist, adapt his plots, and both sides might have benefit from this teaming up. Facebook campaigns are also a good tool to promote your stuff. And don't hesitate to spread your work to cultural-oriented radio station programs or magazines. We did that. We received airplay with some short cuts and short presentation, but promptly received feedbacks from all over the country from people we probably never would have managed to get in touch with otherwise. So this might work for you as well. Thank you for listening, and if you should understand German language, give Ohrenkneifer, www.ohrenkneifer.info, a try. Bye.
Hey, this is Christian, the director, co-writer of the Once and Future Nerd, and if I could give one piece of advice to myself before I started making audio drama, it would be to be aware that audio drama was a thing. Kind of stumbled backwards into the genre after we wrote a TV show that we loved and realized that was far too expensive for anyone to let us make. And I'm really proud of everything that we've done, and I don't regret for a second that I found a way to tell the story that I wanted to tell, but I wish that I had known that audio drama was a thing. I think some of the earlier episodes would have been a lot smoother if we hadn't been kind of reinventing the wheel, and I think our release would have been bigger if we knew what an amazing community we could tap into, because there's such an amazing fan base around the medium of audio drama that I had no idea existed until we had already been releasing for a couple months. So yeah, that's my advice to you if you're starting out, but you're listening to this on the one and only audio drama production podcast, so I guess the advice is kind of wasted, but just go out and make something that you love and that you're passionate about, and also go to onceandfuturenerd.com or search iTunes for Once and Future Nerd and learn from my successes and failures. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, this is Steve Schneider, co-creator of the upcoming audio drama Valenhai. And I was thinking about what would be my most important piece of advice for myself years ago, prior to having gotten interested in or even knowing what audio drama was. And although there's many things I could say, I'll limit it to just this because I think it's the most important for somebody who wants to become excellent at this art form, who wants to become one of the best creators, or at least wants to become the best that they can be. I may know a lot of things about audio drama still, because there's a ton to know. It's a very challenging art form because there's so many facets to it, and there's so many areas that you're going to have knowledge of, and so many skills that you're going to have to be good at, and as of now, the field hasn't developed to the point where you can afford to specialize. That's great if you just want to be a writer, but the reality is we don't have salaries in writers' rooms where you can afford to specialize and just write stuff. That's great if you just want to be a producer, but I think actors and composers can be true specialists if that's really what they feel called to do, and that's great. But for someone who wants to produce, create, write, direct, and produce a work of audio drama, there's a lot of things you got to know, and you don't know them all. The quicker you can come to terms with that, admit that to yourself, accept that that's the reality, and be okay with it, and push your stupid ego out of the way, then the faster you're going to develop and learn. There's no prizes for longevity or seniority. It doesn't matter how long you've been doing it. You could be doing audio drama for 26 years, but if you haven't really learned much in those 26 years and you just keep making the same mistakes over and over again, you're going to get passed up by somebody else who's driven and focused and really being diagnostic about what skills that they have, what skills that they need, and is going about it in a systematic way to develop and shore up their own weaknesses. It's not really rocket science. It's how you develop anything you want to get better at, especially something that has a lot of aspects to it. So that would be my most important piece of advice for somebody who wants to really challenge themselves to pursue excellence and make gains, the most amount of gains in the shortest possible amount of time. Accept your own ignorance in the areas that you're weak at. Get your ego out of the way. Stop trying to hide and cover things up, because really it doesn't matter. Whether you're great at audio drama or whether you suck doesn't change who you are as a person. And reach out to the people whose strengths match up with your weaknesses, and reach out to them and learn from them. And don't be afraid to ask questions and make a lot of effort to expose your areas of weakness, because then they won't be weak areas anymore. And before you know it, you're going to be much, much better at those things than you are right now.
Hi there. Mark Solinger, co-creator of Archive 81 and The Deep Vault here. If I had to give one tip, trick, thing to remember about producing audio drama, it would be simple. Remember to write drama for audio. Sound is tricky. You've probably spent a lot more time watching movies or reading books than you have listening to audio drama. So the rules for what works in audio are less sticky than the rules for movies or books. They're not as easily called to mind. But there are rules, or if not rules, then things that work and things that don't. And the main thing that you have to learn, that I've been trying to learn as I make Archive 81 and The Deep Vault, is to make sound matter. Lean into the medium that you're working with. Don't make the scary or exciting stuff visual. Make it oral. When you're dreaming up your script, it's easy to picture awesome stuff in your mind's eye. A room full of statues frozen at the moment of their deaths. A painting whose landscape shifts in response to the owner's mood. A villain with glowing red eyes. These are cool images. But how are you going to convey them through audio? How are you going to convey them to your podcast's audience? You could have one of your characters describe them, sure, but isn't it better to bring to life people, creatures, settings, and objects that are interesting primarily for their oral qualities? Instead of a room full of frozen statues, why not an airy room full of spheres that contain people's last words, so that when the globes shatter, the sound of their last breaths are released into the world? If you're staging a final fight or a lovesick reunion, doesn't that second room contain more sound possibilities? Point is, fill your show with wax cylinders, monsters with horrifying calls, audio diaries, aliens that communicate through musical tones, sound-rich wonders. I'm not saying your characters should stop describing what things look like, or smell like, or taste like, or feel like, but you're making an audio drama. Sound's gonna be the most important thing. Bring it to the forefront. Anyway, I'm Mark Solinger, co-creator of Archive 81 and The Deep Vault, and that's my advice. Oh, and congrats on the 100 episodes, guys.
Well, we're just about at the end of part one of episode 100. Thank you very much to everyone that's contributed, and thank you to you for listening, especially if you've listened to all 100 episodes. If you want to get in touch in the meantime, please do at the usual places, all the email addresses and Facebook groups, and stick around for part two, which will be coming your way as quickly as possible.
Yeah, it's all on audiodramaproduction.com. That's the website. You'll find links in the show notes to all the shows of the people that contributed to this wonderful episode. It's only half time, but I think we're 3 or 4 nil up by now.
Looking comfortable.
And at time of recording as well, it's Friday evening. I did a really in my 30s thing and joined a beer club. And I got my first delivery yesterday, a case of beer. Some great looking ales in there. I had one last night. It was a 10%er from the Loch Ness Brewery.
Like the dark one.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think I'll celebrate having a few beers tonight.
I might have a few tonight. I'm gigging tomorrow night, actually, so I won't be able to drink tomorrow night. So, yeah, I'll have a few. I'll join you, albeit in my own home.
Right, off you go then. Remember to get in touch on Twitter or Facebook with anyone that was in this episode. Let them know that you appreciate them. If you've not heard their show before, maybe subscribe to it and have a wee listen as well. And look after yourself. Wrap up warm and, enjoy the rest of your day wherever you might be.
Yeah, catch you next time. Take care.